At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologizes to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? Get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
Okay, plenty to discuss this evening. We have, as usual, with us Keith Wood. Evening, Keith.
Good evening, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And then for a change, for one night only, making a guest appearance, Jamie Heaslip. You're very welcome. How are you doing?
Joe, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Even better to talk to Woody.
I can imagine. So one of the reasons, in fact, the reason you're here is you want to support this Focus Ireland initiative. So with the support of Bord Gáis Energy, they are calling on companies, business leaders around the country to support the Shine a Light Night 2020. It's on October 16th, giving one night effectively to help raise much needed funds for vital homelessness services. So the business community can take part by hosting a virtual sleep out, the times that we're living in, be it in their own homes or gardens or safe private spaces. The aim is to raise 1.3 million euro on Shine a Light Night to help the 8,728 people currently homeless in Ireland. So for any and all information, you can go to shinealight.focusireland.ie. Something I'm sure you're very keen to push people to do, Jamie.
And I appreciate giving the time to it, Joe. Obviously, a lot of charities have been affected by the last 6 months, and fundraising is a problem, and the night out is a big one for Focus Ireland. So any and all of any sort of contribution that people can do, or they can do to sleep out themselves, is greatly appreciated.
Okay, well, again, shinealight.focusireland.ie, that is where you can go for all information. 16th of October, anything you can do, much appreciated for obvious reasons. I think we're all acutely aware of just how desperate the situation is in this country when it comes to homelessness. Keith Wood, Six Nations Delay 2021 in the English press today, if we're starting with news of the day, due to start February 6th. So the Six Nations chief executive, Ben Morrill, said, "We need fans back. We're not about to announce that we're going to do this, i.e. a delay, but it is one of the options that is there." It's not shocking to hear this, really. I mean, the RFU have estimated losses of £60 million for next year's Six Nations without fans. The Welsh regions have borrowed about £20 million between them. We know 81% of revenue for RFU comes from the men's international game. There is a desperation, not to put too fine a point on it, to get fans in stadiums if they possibly can next year.
Yeah, I think the Six Nations were trying to get out ahead of it because, you know, things tend to leak all the time anytime you have a conversation. And I would imagine they have plans and plans about plans, and they're looking at every single possibility, every eventuality, to anything to mitigate against the loss in revenue and losses that they're going to have this year. And I remember we spoke to Philip Brown it's a couple of months back now at this stage, and he said, look, it's a very difficult position if you're looking to borrow at the moment without having any idea how the whole landscape will change going forward. And it's very difficult, but I think all sports in a really difficult position. I think rugby, we're seeing it very keenly at the present moment in time, with matches being cancelled because of the testing procedures that are going on, which are great because it means that the testing is working. But I think they're looking at every single opportunity possible. But if they do push back the Six Nations, what then happens? What happens to the club game? What happens to the European Cup matches? What happens to the Lions Tour? Every single decision that's made now will have a fairly substantial knock-on effect.
And as you're reading this, Keith, that given the immense money that the Six Nations will come in, they're prepared to deal with the what happens if scenarios. They just want to maximise the money that the Six Nations can bring in.
Yeah, I think that's a hard way to look at it. But like if we take it from an Irish context, the Six Nations and the Autumn Internationals pretty much funds rugby in Ireland. I mean, yes, money has got through the Pro 14 and the European Cup, but actually the cash king is the Six Nations and the Autumn Internationals. So they need to make certain that they can try and get people through through the door for those. To be honest, I don't know that nobody can actually make a decision at the present moment in time. Like, we can look at it in terms of how each government is trying to deal with everything. They're dealing with whatever information that they have at their disposal at that moment in time. I mean, it's a pretty horrible job for everybody to try and deal with. You know, you've the health side on one side, you have the sustainability and viability of certain sports on the other. And you've just a straight cash thing, because these are businesses and businesses need money to survive.
For a few hours across Sunday and Monday morning, Jamie, they were looking at level five, which would have meant even the Italian Six Nations game wouldn't have gone ahead. So that is going to go ahead now. They'll get this year's Six Nations done, at least. In broad terms, I'm sure you're still looking on with half a player's hat and all this and how it might affect them. Regardless, there are just no easy answers at the moment.
No. I mean, it's kind of volatile times and certain times that are pretty complex and in terms of answers, I mean, there's no clear answers. Everything's pretty ambiguous going forward. And talk with certain players when we were in the depths of the initial lockdown, you know, it was hard for them at times to be training towards something. And I actually think, you know, the different clubs in general, you know, gave a lot of understanding around it and let players have time off and decompress, because it's very hard to keep focused when the goalposts keep changing. This doesn't help, but I think everyone's gotten in a strange way is used to the uncertainty, is being flexible. But to Woody's point, there does seem to be these kind of hard stopping points where decisions do have to be made. If a Six Nations go ahead, for example, like, or how far along can they push it down the road and have the knock-on effect into other competitions like Pro 14, Europe, tours, you know, and that can have a knock-on effect into the following season, into 2021-22. Mm. But it's, you know, we're definitely not going to figure it out tonight, Joe, but it definitely... is not great, but it's great that it's on TV, because I was actually having a conversation with someone recently that in a funny way you realize that sport is more than just sport, that having something on the TV at the weekend for people to look at and get some sort of enjoyment for shows that it's more than just an event. It's a release for a lot of people, and in some way, in a strange way, it can bring relief to some people in terms of providing entertainment.
Yeah. The other news of the day, by the way, it does seem as if Munster Edinburgh will go ahead this Saturday. One player has tested positive, was the news during the week, is asymptomatic, thankfully, and six players are self-isolating. I mean, the downside is that Johan van Graan could potentially be without seven players at the weekend. There's another round of testing happening today. And if it is cancelled, if worse comes to worse, the league has about four make-up dates across January and February. So that's where we are on the Munster front. Jamie, just to take a slightly broader look at Irish rugby over the last couple of weeks, very curious for your thoughts on the Leinster Saracens games, if you want to throw in Newcastle as well, and then the 25 Pro 14 matches in between, which Leinster won. Obviously, people have drawn various conclusions from those two defeats and drawn parallels with the Ireland-England games. Give us your read on what happened a couple of weeks ago and what it tells us about where Irish rugby is.
Okay, well, if we look at the broad picture, if I'm honest, to go, I think what you say, Joe, was it 25 games undefeated, is a pretty substantial thing to do. I think we can all agree. In the Pro 14, they used, 55 players across that as well. So that's an achievement in itself on a couple of different levels. But if we boil it down to the Saris game, for example, a lot of people obviously got I don't know if they're frustrated, they were annoyed, if they were kind of waiting for Leinster to lose. They were always inevitably going to lose at some game, right? And it just happened to be Saracens doing it you know, 12 months previous. You know, what did they do? I think Saracens executed a plan a lot better than Leinster. They play a negative game, and they executed very well. They slowed Leinster down. Leinster played into it a little bit, particularly in the first half, by playing a little bit too much, maybe around the halfway. Their kicking game, where they're trying to manipulate the two guys in the backfield, and they're kicking a lot, particularly off 13, by drawing up that, drawing up the full back into the line and getting that blindside winger and trying to isolate, find that space. They didn't get to execute it as well. On top of that, you give away a lot of penalties. You go in at 22-3 at halftime. It makes it pretty tough going against a side that's quite happy to give you the ball and defend and be stingy and just play territory and position. If you get into an arm wrestle with them, which Saracens want you to do, just like England, it's very like they've got big players that will isolate, will shut down the gain line. You know, we were very direct at times, which feeds into what Saracens do. They shut you down with their physicality there and slow down the ball quite cleverly, but while maintaining a lot of people in the defensive line. So it can kind of get frustrating every time you look up and you see 13, 14 people in the line. But given all that, Leinster actually changed up a little bit in the second half, came out attacking, attacked a little bit more from death actually, and kind of got back into the game. But in essence, I think they just left it too long, as opposed to when you look at Racine the following week. Racine stay in the fight, quite patient, stay in the fight. And then it takes a team like Racine, a player like Russell, to moment of brilliance to unlock a side like Saracens. And if you're looking in a bigger context of Ireland, England, or England in general, I think they're the similar themes that people have to be kind of looking out for.
Right, because one of the other points made is that it comes down to power as much as anything. Ireland are struggling with aspects of the English power game, be it Saracens or England.
Yeah, the coach dictates the game plan on the players that he has. And in a Leinster context, they don't have huge players, right? Or they don't have the volume of huge players that Saracens would have had, for example. And the type of game that Leinster play is a very mobile game, very fast game, moving the point of contact the whole time, looking to keep the ball in play a lot. I think it was like 31 minutes ball in play in the Saracens game, which is dramatically reduced from what Leinster looked to play at. That's the game they play, and they went up against a Saracens team who play a very different style. And England will play very much like Saracens, which is big ball carriers, will be very direct, will try and dominate that gain line collision, but with the ball and without it. But they're only going to play in your half. They're going to kick the life out of it, play the numbers essentially, and then look for the moments, you know, with the big ball runners to condense you, and then they will use the speed eventually. I don't think they're going to unlock you as well as a side like come back to Leinster and Racine, like those who move it around a little bit more. And Ireland have to be aware of that, I suppose, coming up into this international window and going forward, that we're not the biggest side. And actually, if you think about it, I think our big players are like physically players, I think they're coming to the end of their tenure. And I don't know if we have the pipeline of those kind of players coming through.
Right, okay. And one last one which arose as well, I'd be curious for your thoughts on. The 25 games in the Pro 14, when you lose against Saracens, that can be spun around as almost an indictment of the Pro 14. And the question was raised as to whether it's fit for purpose in the sense of preparing a Leinster team to go up against the higher echelons of European rugby. Your sense of the Pro 14 and what it's doing or not doing for Leinster at the moment?
I don't know. I don't really know how to answer that, if I'm honest, Joe, because like it is what it is, right? It's the league that they play in. I mean, they can't really do anything about it. I think the addition of South African sides would definitely help in terms of having bigger sides in the in that league. But like, I mean, it's like the Premiership played in a different style. France has played in a different way. like it's a hard one. Like some years people say the Pro 14 is great. Some like they give out about it. Some years they say it's great. Other years, I mean, I think it all depends on how it falls for the opposition league. You know what I mean? And look, they're set up differently as well, right? Here in Ireland, we're essentially contracted, so everything's geared towards the national side and operated in that way. While in England, and France, the clubs own the player, so it's their prerogative to keep putting them out and out and out. So they just, you know, it's not our fault that it's tiered in such a way as, you know, Europe, you have your Pro 14 into Europe, into international, and the IFU definitely tier it in that way in terms of the exposure of players to the amount, to the volume of games they play. While in England, it's just, you know, you're not playing in a Six Nations game. It's not like you get a weekend off. You're back and you're playing with your club.
Keith, Munster at the weekend, I know you watched the game. They were down by, 14 points with 11 minutes to go and came back brilliantly, and you know Ben Healy came on and kicked, and I want to ask you about him. Can I put a few points Donal Lenihan made in the Irish Examiner to you first, though, and get your overall thoughts on Munster thus far in the season? He was frustrated, frankly, and felt they were playing within themselves, was not happy with the style of rugby, felt it was predictable, and no width in the game. He talked about, you know, this midfield partnership they have now. He mentioned Chris Farrell, who scored a try in the 68th minute. That was the first time that Farrell had touched the ball in that entire half, and effectively just felt there's so much more in the group than he was seeing. And he said of Craig Casey, to see him box kick from Munster line out on the Scarlets 22, 10 minutes into the game, is proof that the Munster nines are playing to instruction. And it just ties into that overall question. Is Larkham getting his hands on this team at the moment? What did you make of the game and the performance?
I would echo that entirely. And there were frustrations I had. That kick on the 22 is a bad kick. Actually, you don't kick it up into the air, because if someone catches it, they have a mark and you can kick it out. So we used to never play with kicking in the 22. But actually, if you kick it along the ground, which Leinster have been doing since the return in England did in the last couple of matches against Ireland, they can really turn a defensive line and can be very, very effective. Box kicking on the 22, I don't like. To be honest, Casey kicked an awful lot in the first 10 minutes, I think 6 or 7 times the first 10 minutes of the game. So that's frustrating, because I'm excited by him. I'm excited by the fact that he gets to the ruck and flings the ball. There's a couple of things I'd say. It was a great win because it's a win away from home against a Scarlets team that's pretty heavily laden with Welsh players. And I think they played a game to get the win, though their getting of the win went entirely against the odds with 10 minutes to go. So I think they'd be happy with the win at the end of it. I equally imagine that they'd be frustrated with it. For me, I am frustrated that the forwards are still standing when they catch the ball. And I also understand that if you get too far over the gain line, you can be incredibly exposed at the moment. So like, we need to see Munster make a change where their big guys are running onto the ball with another guy ready to clear out the guy immediately afterwards. They have to start working in twos. There can be nobody on their own, because all the really good poachers are doing huge damage since lockdown. Dialende and Farrell, for me, I'm frustrated because, like, Farrell's try was magic, because he got a ball passed flat and it was low, it was dipping low, but he didn't run onto it, but only by the dint of his ability to move his feet on contact and the fact that he's a giant of a man, he stretched over to score. It's a great try, but we have huge guys. You'd like to see the 10 take the ball at pace on the line, pull it to a centre, and they're all afraid of what Dialende will do if he's coming from depth. Like, all the centres will be geared up to tackle him and they'll tackle him, but in the tackle you're going to knock him over the gain line, and we haven't done that yet, and we do need to do it, because that's where the momentum comes from. Momentum doesn't come from forwards or backs from standing starts going over the gain line. So I didn't watch it live, and I'm glad I didn't watch it live, because there was 60 minutes. Though when I went back in it and I read all the newspapers on it, the first half was more even. Some of the scrummaging was pretty decent. I thought the two props actually played very well in the first half. I am frustrated as well with the referee's interpretation of some of the rucks, and On both sides, by the way, not just from a Munster's perspective. And I will say there was one in particular where Farrell came out of the line to make a hit. It was a cracking tackle. And he then put his hands on the ground because he was going to fall over the guy because your man crumpled. Now, for me, that's an entire lack of feel from the referee to say that that's a penalty. Like, what else could he do? If he fell on the ground, it's a penalty for falling down. He held himself up. There's elements in that law, and I'd really, like, Jamie was very good at this stuff. I'd like to hear his thoughts on it. But that interpretation of it makes it incredibly difficult for a player to do the right thing in certain circumstances.
Do you want to come in on that, Jamie?
Well, on the rule, well, look, I mean, yeah, they're trying to speed up the rooks, right? And they're trying to figure out how they do it. I would echo Woody's and a lot of people's frustration around probably the, I don't know if it's inconsistency or, you know, they're kind of, I don't know who they're trying to impress. I mean, they have to get a certain amount of penalties, it seems, on around the ruck, and they're being judged on that. I think there is a frustration, there's a learning curve. I think hopefully it will start to level out as feedback comes in. But a little bit, coming back a little bit to what he was talking about in terms of frustrations around Munster, you're gonna laugh at this. I'm frustrated seeing them play the way they are playing, because they have so much ability, particularly that centre partnership, which is unbelievably exciting to watch. But they're not being given the ball enough. And I don't know if it's down to do they have the ability to get it to them, or it's the game plan. This is the part that I just can't wrap my head around. I do know that in terms of the running, it's too predictable. In the forwards, they're running directly into guys. Defensive systems are too good now to deal with just straight on runners. Very little footwork, and that doesn't help. It doesn't help Munster be able to build that momentum, build that quick ball that can let those centres cause havoc.
And how difficult is it to become a bit more unpredictable?
It's a good question. something that you should ask a coach, Joe. But in terms of, you got to look at how they're training and what the game plan is. And I don't have insight into that.
Yeah. How would you sum up the if you were to sum up their general game plan in a line or two?
It's too predictable.
Yeah. But what are they trying to do? Is it just box kick the leather off the ball?
I think they're trying. Look, I think the coaches are looking at them and they're going, okay, we've got this bunch of players. We're going to play a lot of territory. We're going to get into an arm wrestle and we're going to grind out wins. That's what I think they're trying to do. That'd be my take on it. Yeah. I could be way off.
Sure.
Trying to do that arm wrestle game, once you come up against bigger sides, you come up against smarter sides. If you're just running straight into them all day, they're going to tackle you, put to the ground, and they're going to send one into the ruck. And then they're going to put 13 in the line and put one or two in the backfield. So you're going to end up, like, good sides against them are just putting the man to the ground because he's easy to tackle, because he's not putting any footwork on. He's back ending the tackle. Everyone else in the defensive line, two in the backfield. And it becomes quite easy because they're not changing it up. But I think if they change it up, they use a bit of footwork, they use a bit of movement, they use that center pairing more, they will change the point of attack and they'll start stretching defences maybe a little bit more.
Mm. And Keith, I asked this, it is early in the season, but you wonder what Stephen Larkham is doing there. He can't think this is his vision for rugby. He's working under a coach, obviously, but you wonder, has he been given enough influence?
I also think it's trying to get off to the right start or to finish at the end of it. I like the question you've asked is, what's Munster's way of playing? It's... I think it's very forward dominated and it has to deliver almost at 100%. But I actually think it's quite hard to get into the game. And if you kick the ball that often, I think not a lot of guys get into it very quickly.
Mm.
So, look, I also think it's he's not new into it, but he hasn't been in it that long. I would like to see an awful lot more in it. I think we saw a little bit more when Ben Healy came on. He might know any better, which is kind of maybe good in this instance, in that he's raw and he has an awful lot of learning to do. but he was incredibly confident in even like he made two or three cock-ups as soon as he came on. It didn't affect his confidence. I mean, I love it. You love that from a 10. He's going to have to learn an awful lot in how they managed to bring him in and to make him part of the setup more, because he was looking to kick to the corner. He was looking to kick to the post at different time. He was looking to make decisions. I think that's fantastic. I hate the idea that there is a discussion over what are we going to do next. You know, you want guys that are trying to lead on the field. And look, for me, it was great because I just saw him, you know, his run-up is not particularly manufactured. He can boot the leather off the ball himself. He can kick it fairly prodigious distances. Mm. And he didn't seem to doubt it for a second. So for me, that was a huge reaction. And, you know, I have to say, I thought the bench, in many respects, dug out that win. And I thought Munster used their bench really well. I thought Scarlets used their bench really badly. They took off their leaders off the field and they looked a little bit lost as soon as Munster got into it. So there's a fair element of luck involved in this. Look, I'd still go back and say I'm very happy with the fact that they got the win. But you want to see more, and you want to see what can this team do. You know, you want to see, like, I saw them really enjoy the end of it, but up until that period of time, they were pretty grumpy. You know, it was a very grumpy reaction. Peter Mahoney getting sent off, you know, stupidly. And, you know, so like, for me, I got excited to see the level of excitement at the end.
Yeah.
But to see that in the first 10 minutes, not wait for the last kick of the game.
Okay. Before we wrap things up then, so Andy Farrell is going to name a squad very soon. Jamie, in some respects, you know, loads of time has passed since the World Cup, and yet in Irish rugby terms, it's just a handful of games, really. You know, the Welsh game and then the game at Twickenham, and this is the first really sustained period Andy Farrell is going to get with the team, bar that early part of the Six Nations. To take the Munster theme, because it was used against Ireland at the World Cup, certainly, on the predictable spectrum, where are Ireland for you at the moment?
Oh, God, when I think back to the Six Nations, I think they showed glimpses of actually kind of creating this two-sided attack. So by they were splitting the field around the, you know, if you looked at the width of the field around, you know, 70-30 split in the field, and having people like Jordan come up on the short side and having this kind of two first receiver approach, or Jordan would work hard and go out the backfield, and they would create length in the line and basically testing these defensive sides and doing it as well by hitting front door people off the 10, or, you know, forward, pot of three forwards carrying, bit of footwork, option to tip on or pull it out the back to the 10 and he can hit the center pairing. So they showed that. Mm. And then it seemed like they pulled back. So I was very excited, but then I got concerned, if I'm honest.
Why would a team tend to pull back?
I don't know, Joe. I don't know. That's a question for Andy, and maybe I'm getting the my perception of it is wrong. But my concern is that I don't know if we pick the players that we picked, that we will have the ability to play an expansive game. And that's the game I feel we need to play. I don't think we can get into an arm wrestle. And when it comes, that's what I think, you know, with Munster, are they able to play the game they want to play with the players that they're picking? And that's why I think it's going to be really interesting come Ireland selection of who he starts picking for that squad, who he's going to give a chance to. There's a lot of new blood there that hasn't been capped, that's shown a lot of promise from all the provinces. And I think now is the window to do it, because you're coming into a 2-year mark, coming out from World Cup. And I think it's the right time to potentially cull the squad a certain degree and start bringing that talent through, so they have 10, 15, 20 caps.
So who are the players who have the talent to play that expansive game that you would like to see come in then?
Who would I like to see? To be honest, Joe, I haven't thought about a whole lot more outside of Leinster. So I'll get absolutely caned once I start going on with Leinster players, and Woody will definitely get stuck into me on that point. But I'd like to see people like a James Lowe get picked. I'd like to see him get some game time. I'd like to see Kaelin get a little bit more game time, if I'm honest, and challenge the back row in general. We've got an abundance of talent all around the island, so we're kind of okay on that front. Just sharing it around, I think, is really what we need to see. Chris Farrell, I'd like to see him get a bit more game time. But again, the centres, like Bundy was amazing at the weekend. I think Bundy is kicked on a level. If I'm honest, so that's going to be a headache. Gary Ringrose in the form of his life. Second row, Ryan Baird, I think needs to get capped as well. And I know, I'm sure I've forgotten a couple of guys, but they're still in certain positions. I still think there's a step change between what we have and where everyone else is at. So I think from Murr to everyone else, there's still a big gap. I think with Sexto and everyone else, I think there's a big gap. And you could probably say the same between, you know, Healy and Kilcoyne and everyone else, and probably the same between Porter and Furlong and everyone else. So they'd be the worrying positions, but like, we've plenty of talent coming through in the other ones. And I would just like to see a bit of a change up.
Okay. And on the back row, by the way, so, I mean, you can list off however many names. I mean, you start with Leinster and you go through the rest of the country, and it seems like we do have lots of back row talent. What about the sense that they lack whatever word you want to use, be it dog or niggle or nouse? Dan Levy is cited as someone who does have it. But in general, is that Irish back row, I don't know what the phrase to use is really, but is it a too nice almost might be the best way of putting it for you?
I'm not following, Joe. What do you mean?
Brian O'Driscoll said a while back that he didn't feel the Irish back row had enough dog in it.
Okay. I maybe I just view the game very differently. I think you, in terms of a headset or a mindset, you either want to be there or not. You want to be in the fight or you don't. And I don't know how, you know, people show that. You know, some guys are more vocal than others. Some people just go about their job quietly and are quite effective that way. I don't know. I don't know what Brian means by that, right? So it's hard for me to comment on that. But
so you think that back row, it can go toe to toe? You know, the 4, 5, 6 players all in contention there. That's not an area of weakness for Ireland at all these days.
I think we picked the right back row. I think we will have a back row that's very strong relative to other international back rows. However, I just hope we don't go the route of picking what we always did.
Okay. What's your back row ideal world?
God, Joe, you really put me on the spot here. Andy Farrell drinks in the same, well, when pubs are open, he drinks in the same pub as me down the road. So like, come on, I need to go in and be able to have a pint with this man. I suppose ideal back row, look, if Levy's back, I start him all day.
Okay.
That's a bit harsh probably on Connors or Josh. I'm really liking Jack O'Donoghue, by the way. I think he's coming into his element more and more and more. I think he's just really athletic, and I would like him to actually get a bit more game time. And then I would probably put probably Kaelin at 8, and I'd put CJ at 6, if I was honest.
And we'd be locked and loaded and ready to go against any team with that.
I think we would be in a very good position, yeah. I mean, obviously a lot of tactics has to come into it, but yeah, I think we'd be in a good place.
Yeah. Keith, what are you looking at for then to round this off? We'll have plenty more time to talk to you over the next couple of weeks, obviously, but in broad terms, anything Jamie's saying there which jumped out to you?
Yeah, I was quite happy just to let him hang himself there.
Yeah, thanks, Woody.
I know, it's the quietest I've ever been. I do understand Brian's view on the dog idea, which is you need to be a nuisance on the field. There needs to be more edge to it. I think we have a huge amount of very athletic players that play really, really well. And at times we get bullied a little bit. And so if I was trying to describe it, the best guy that's around at the present moment in time, now he's class anyway, is Maratoje. So he is a fantastic athlete, but he is stuck in everybody's face all the time. He is it's on the edge all the time, and he is keeping it on the right side of the edge all the time. So for me, if you have that back row, I think it's a good back row. but you need the balance in the pack and a couple of guys in the backs as well. You need it needs to be, it's very hard to describe it. I mean, I was listening to Jamie trying to not describe it almost, but it is, we are missing a little something, and I don't know quite what it is. And all I can say is from the Saracens game and the England game, we've been, really, really good players have been second best. So something needs to be engendered to bring that to a higher level. And it could be, niggle is the wrong word actually, but we, you know, we need to be more of a nuisance of ourselves.
I have a question, Woody. Do you think there's enough competition, or do you think guys are feel too comfortable?
It depends what you mean by competition. You'll know for yourself, if you were fit, you'd expect to play every minute of every day. Did that diminish how you trained or how you played? No. So I don't think that that's a competition issue. I would have felt the same myself, but I would have also taken the view that I had to prove it every single second I went out onto the field, both on the training field and on the match field. And I didn't always do it, but I tried to do it always. And that's attitude is there. I don't know that that's the case. But if we look at big men that Leinster had, we don't have a Sean O'Brien who was a nuisance. If he carried the ball, he hurt you. So it doesn't even matter whether guys tackle you or don't tackle you. He was carrying it at a million miles an hour. It's just a hard thing to deal with. And the opposition are having to say, oh my God, no, here's Sean O'Brien again. And it's that idea of a guy. I don't know that that's a lack of, like, you couldn't say there's a lack of competition in the back row for Ireland in particular. That's extraordinary. I would say on your lists of tight heads, I think John Ryan showed on the weekend that he has something more. I don't know whether you like the look. I don't know if I like that look that you're giving on the radio. But I thought he showed an awful lot more. I still think Porter is young, and I think it takes a while for guys to get through. He'll learn an awful lot. I actually think wonderful things for Porter. But we want Porter for another 10 years. So it's trying to, there's always a couple of gnarly old guys in it. Our old guys aren't that gnarly. So, and we're saying that on the same weekend that Peter Manning got sent off for being too gnarly. So where's the balance? And so that's what we're looking for.
Yeah, I'll give you last word then, Jamie, because I kind of led the witness a little bit in terms of asking about predictable.
And yeah,
then I was curious for your thoughts on the back row, obviously, because it's an area that you've played in. But just that was very interesting what you said at the initial point on two-sided attack, and you saw glimpses of that. So if you had to diagnose the ills of the Irish team over the last kind of year, and specifically what you want to see now in these next couple of games, be it in approach or selection or otherwise, I'll give you a final word. Sum up what you want to see.
Oh, well, at this juncture, I want to see variety at this point, because like I said, I mean, it's very easy for us to sit back and go, okay, we got to think in like World Cup cycles, right? You know, and when you're in the coach and you're in it, you probably feel like, you know, it's a hard balance to strike, you know, your short to medium term versus long term, right? Mm. But I think what a great window between the next two Six Nation games and the Autumn Series to bleed new players, try some new things, try some new combinations, and just change it up and have a bit of variety here, and don't go what you always have done, because you'll always get what you got.
Okay. Well, on that note, Jamie was with us, Focus Ireland, with the support of Bord Gáis Energy. I'll give this a mention again. It's a brilliant cause. They are asking companies across the country, if you've just tuned in, to contribute to Shine a Light Night 2020. It's on October 16th. Where are we in the world? October 16th. So one night to help raise much needed funds for homeless services in the country. We have 8,728 people currently homeless in Ireland. They're hoping to raise over €1 million. So if you want to get involved, you can have a virtual sleep out, your own homes, gardens, safe private spaces, and so on. The place to go is shinealight.focusireland.ie, and you can get all and any information. So Keith Wood, as ever, thank you. And Jamie Heaslip, we'll do it again sometime. Thanks very much.
Appreciate it, Joe. Thanks a million. Thanks, Woody.
Cheers, lads. Good to see you, Jamie.
Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team.
Team of Us. Everyone in.